Okay, it says we're live. I am Aaron Egler, Cheesehead TV, in the house at 8 p.m. Eastern, because why not? A lot going on. Oh, wait, someone's here with me. It would be Andy Herman. I'm not going to call you a co-host, because that would be doing you a disservice, but Grand Poobah of Pack-A-Day podcast would probably suffice. Andy, how the hell are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Like I told you as I came on, this is a lot more fun when we're doing this on the roof of Banky's house and not virtually. No, but
why do you got to go there, man? We're trying to, why are you bringing everybody down?
I know. It's just one of those things, you know, missing training camp, but this is
great. I mean, last night, a year ago, was family night. Yeah. So that tells you all, that legit tells you all you need to know about where we are as far as that's how different things are at this point. Because you and I, you are sequestered in your home. I am here in my home. And I don't doubt, I know the Brewers are about to play, so we won't go too long. But I did want to jump on and talk about everything that's happened. Hell, yeah. Not just the off season, but obviously players have now reported. We've created a COVID-19 reserve list. I can't even imagine. Let's get that out of the way first.
Sure.
Everything we're about to talk about is obviously kind of overshadowed by, and there's a cloud over, this idea that, yeah, we're about to have an NFL season amidst a pandemic, a global, worldwide pandemic. How often do you think about that as you're breaking down teams, the Packers, film, whatever? Yeah. Because for myself, I was gold earlier this summer. Where it was like, okay, we'll get to the NFL season. And I never thought for a minute that it would be like, it would be over. Right. But I thought there'll be a handle on it and we'll have an obvious way forward. At this point, I'm like, I can't focus because all I'm thinking of is, you heard from Aaron Rodgers today. You heard from Kenny Clark today. How different things are. How the facility is completely different. How the training camp is completely different. How often are you kind of haunted by this idea of, hey, we may start the season, but it may get shut down right away?
Yeah, you talk about that black cloud. You know, it's almost like being at training camp and seeing that rain cloud coming from behind and wondering, all right, did I just come down to training camp for nothing? Is practice going to be canceled? It's like that, except right. On a much grander scale. And, yep. You know, I think it has that feeling to it. But I think for me, the first time that it really, really, really hit was when everything happened to the Marlins. That was the first time.
Yes, I totally agree. Like,
you know what?
Oh, exactly.
Baseball goes for almost a week. Things seem to be going well. It looked like the basketball or NBA.
Well, when we had the Brewers a couple nights where we were like, oh, this is, we're back.
All right. In, you know, that was the first time when the Marlins thing happened. And then all of a sudden, you know, doubling down and the Cardinals have the same thing happen. That was the first moment for me where I was like, okay, this is looking ominous at best. And, you know, as far as it affecting me, you know, the way that I've kind of handled it the entire offseason so far and up until this point is basically, I think everyone needs a distraction. And as much as I've been trying to do that, I've been trying to just keep everything status quo as much as possible, making the caveat every now and again that says, you know what? There's a million different things that we need to be worried about other than who the Packers took in the seventh round of the draft. Right. But I want to, you know, provide some level of norm.
But you want to be there for the people who care about that.
Exactly. You know, because
we are those people, right? Yeah, I mean, at the same time as everything's going on in whatever parts of the world, including obviously in America and everything that's going on, Wisconsin, whatever, you try to shut it out, but you know, on some level, you have to go through your day by day, right?
Absolutely.
So to that end, let's move past that. So we will put that aside for now as much as we can. Yep. I'm sure it will come up again in these conversations. What was your takeaway today, either from Kenny or Aaron, as far as where you think this team is heading into a very unusual training camp?
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to see Kenny's. I was working during Kenny's, but I was on Aaron's. You know, I thought Aaron, per usual, handled everything fantastic. You know, I think he's probably smart to try to stay away from as many hypotheticals as he can, even though everything is hypothetical at this point.
Right.
But, you know, the biggest takeaway for me and just of how prepared they are now, I'm just so incredibly grateful that this is not Matt LaFleur's first season and not Nathaniel Hackett's first season.
That's a great point. I mean, I hadn't even thought of that, but that's a great point.
know, they gained so much last year by not only being able to go out and do what they wanted to do, but having success in their first year, not having a ton of adversity that they had to overcome. I think they built up a really strong locker room. And I just think all those seeds that they planted are really, who knows what it ultimately sows. They're so far ahead. I mean, if this would have had to been the first season, just I can't even imagine it. The questions already surrounding a new head coach, a new locker room, a bunch of new free agents. And then, you know, extrapolate that across having a COVID and an entire pandemic. I don't know how you kind of get through that. So a lot of those other teams, the Carolina Panthers come to mind. They have a basically entirely new roster, new coach, new everything. I can't imagine that situation. So the fact that this is Rodgers' second year in the system, that was, you know, something that he spoke about a little bit today. That was kind of my takeaway.
Well, that's a good, you bring up something that's been talked about a bit, probably over various kind of mediums this offseason, but how much do you think, especially now that we're kind of at the point where, okay, these players are reporting, we know we're going ahead, right? Or we're going to try to. How much do you think the continuity plays into whatever success the Packers may or may not have early on in the season? Because you look across the league, you're talking about the Panthers, there are plenty of teams. There was a bunch of turnover this year, and there is every year, obviously, but you know, there's a lot of turnover as far as not even just head coaches, but play callers, coordinators, etc. How much do you think continuity helps the Packers in 2020?
Yeah, in a normal season, I'm not sure I would say that much, because I think, you know, you stay status quo sometimes, and I think the league can kind of catch up to you. And I think teams will, I think even at the end of last year, teams started to figure out a little bit what Rodgers and LaFleur were kind of trying to accomplish. So I think you're going to lose some of that surprise factor that I think Green Bay had a little bit earlier in the year, and teams can scout a little bit more. But I think in 2020, I think that continuity is huge. I mean, just not even being able to have a full training camp, no preseason, no OTAs, no mini camps. I mean, they're just doing walkthroughs right now. So they're not going to have barely any time to get things ramped up. And to be able to carry over the things that they were doing against Seattle and San Francisco and Minnesota towards the end of last year, I think that gives them a huge advantage. They're not trying to reinvent anything. They're more trying to master a lot of the concepts that they learned last year with adding in some wrinkles. A million times, I think that this is a huge benefit to Green Bay and the teams that have been able to keep some continuity during this offseason, which there are new quarterbacks in a ton of places, new coaches in a ton of places, new GMs, new coordinators. I mean, everything kind of got topsy-turvy even in this crazy offseason. So I think it's a huge advantage.
All right. Yeah, I love this. All right. We got like pandemic going on. We got the big world questions, whatever. No. We got a super chat from Joseph who's asking Quincy Enwa in the slot. Yes or no?
Quincy Enwa, I'd have to look. I thought he was actually on IR and basically going to be out for the season.
Well, I mean, he got released today. So, you know, Packers fans, he plays wide receiver. So instantly he'll automatically upgrade the Packers wide receiver corps. Even if he's on IR, Packers fans don't care.
That's true.
You know, new name.
If he's healthy, I'm all in. I'd have to look at it. If he's not,
I'm going to say no. And I will 100%. Back up my guy Tyler, who runs social for us at GSetTV, who wrote a great piece today about why no, the Packers don't need another wide receiver. They're fine.
I agree.
But to that end, I will say, it is funny watching kind of Packers fans, media, whatever, kind of grapple with the idea that, you know, the wide receiving core under Mike McCarthy was very important because you ran 3, 4, even 5 wide receivers and you had to be deep there. And I understand, could they augment that talent at some point? No doubt. And it's no doubt that Brian Gutekunst has attempted to do so. He's, you know, been in on Allen Robinson. He made a play for Anderson last year with the Jets.
Yep.
And he, you know, he called on what's his name with the Chiefs, who just re-signed. I can't remember his name right now. But so he's been in on these wide receivers. He just hasn't wanted to overpay. I think my theory is because he recognizes who LaFleur is, what that system entails, as far as it's all about 5 eligibles. It's not about 5 wide receivers. So you've got guys like Jay Sternberger ready to take the next step. You've got guys like DeGuara, who you drafted. You've got guys like Aaron Jones, who's shown he's a weapon out of the backfield.
Yes, he is.
It's not necessarily you know, paramount that you have 3, 4, 5 deep at wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm 1,000,000% there with you. And I think the other thing that's really interesting too is they don't need a number one receiver. They don't need a number 3, 4, 5, or 6 receiver. The only thing that you could semi-argue is that they needed specifically maybe a number 2 that could have upgraded that position. And I think you look at free agency via trades, I don't think that there was anyone out there at a good price point. Emmanuel Sanders even got overpaid, right. And I'm not sure he's even that good of a number 2.
And he had to decide, right? He had an offer from Green Bay.
Exactly. So I don't necessarily know that situation presented itself. And then you look, the top 6 wide receivers were gone by the time the Packers even traded up to pick 25 in the draft. And I don't think there was a true number 2 that was available when they were picking or had the option to go up and get. So I just think that story kind of told itself this offseason. The depth is there. They have guys who can play in this league as number 3, 4, 5 wide receivers, whether it's a Kumro and EQ and MVS, you know, whether.
Are you a Lazard believer or do you think he's just a placeholder?
No, one of my favorite articles I wrote this offseason was believing that this is not another Geronimo Allison. This is not another Jarrett Boykin. I fully get that Packer fans have kind of been burnt by these undrafted free agents who've had a good season, and then they kind of expect them to be that number 2 guy, and then it just flames out, and it never really, you know, ends up, you know, working out. And I do not think that that's going to be the case with Lazard at all. I saw enough out of him as a blocker, as a receiver. Here's all you need to know. Rodgers threw to him in clutch situations last season and really trusted him and had faith in him. That's kind of in a way all I need to know to believe that he can continue on the, you know, progression that he had a season ago.
Let's flip over to the defensive side because we did get to hear it from Kenny today. You weren't privy to it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll watch it, because the availability is on Packers.com. But one of the things we talked about with Kenny was this propensity from Mike Pettine to play so much dime. There's a lot of dime, more than any other team in the league by far in Green Bay last year. Who do you see? Because I don't suddenly expect Mike Pettine to kind of change his stripes, so to speak. Who do you see stepping in as far as that third defensive back? Because it's obvious that on the outside, you've got Jair and Kevin King, right? Yep. And at safety, you've got Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage. They're not going anywhere. Raven Green started the year great and then got hurt and was out for a long time, came back and did whatever. But who do you expect to kind of step into that third role if they have to play so much dime?
Yeah, I think you're going to see two people really step up. And you mentioned one, Raven Green. And I think, you know, it's for him, it's just staying healthy at this point. I feel like I've seen enough out of him in the games that he's been in that, you know, I think sometimes these players can get overhyped a little bit. I don't think Raven Green.
Get out of town.
Tiny bit. I love Raven Green. Love Raven Green. But I don't think he's ever going to be like this, you know, all of a sudden this game-changing inside linebacker slash safety. But I think he's going to be a good player that fits that role really well and can cover backs and tight ends at that kind of hybrid linebacker position. And then I really loved what I saw out of Chandon Sullivan, not just in the games last year, but in going back to training camp, to preseason. This is a guy who had to earn everything last year. In training camp, he made play after play after play just to get his name in the conversation. In that last preseason game, he was playing safety and corner just to show, hey, I can do this if you absolutely need me to. You know, he does that. Then finally, he gets in a game against the Cowboys. He immediately intercepts
the pass.
He was great. You go back and look, and there wasn't anything that he made any egregious errors or mistakes. I know it was in limited playing time, but I think he's earned the ability to kind of get that nickel corner position. But I thought that was actually the one question I saw from Kenny was from you today. I thought it was a great question about the dime. I loved his little chuckle when you asked it. But,
doesn't that tell you all you need to know about, like, if you're a defensive player, if you're like a defensive lineman, and you know you're playing more dime than anybody else in the league, at that point, you got to be like, yo, it's great that everyone can double team me on every fucking play. Yeah. But at some point, I'd like to get some help.
Get some help. Exactly. No, I'm with you. And I think you could see, instead of some of the nickel situations where they went with, you know, Tremont and King and Jair, it wouldn't, you know, a big nickel has become more, you know, prevalent
it's the NFL way now, right?
So right. I wouldn't shock me to see Raven Green, Adrian Amos at safety, and even potentially a Darnell Savage in that nickel spot with Jair and King on the outside, and then two linebackers to actually go with two defensive linemen on the inside. I think that's totally within the realm of possibility to try to not maybe be in a true dime, but still get some defensive backs on the field and still give you some versatility.
Hey, I just want to give a shout out to Tom Marin, who should check out YouTube when he's given us grief about our viewership on Facebook, because I literally added on Facebook as a trial to see if I could do the simulcast and like pull it off. Come over to YouTube, buddy. You're a moron. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. You're an idiot. So to continue on, with Aaron Rodgers talking today and everything we heard about Rodgers' love, the transition, etc., everything we've heard throughout the offseason, do you think that, okay, could it possibly be Aaron Rodgers' last year in Green Bay this year? I know we've talked a lot about, you wrote a great article about how it could be 2 years and out, but do you think it could be 1 year and out?
Yeah, my article actually was originally about it being potentially 1 year and out and that making the potential most sense. That was prior, however, to the kind of current situation in a way that we are in and not having any preseason and right. not maybe getting to see any of Jordan
Love. Yeah, but don't you think that Love could prove himself throughout the year? It's not like they won't be practicing during the season.
100%. Is it within the realm of possibility? Yes. I think that those possibilities took a little bit of a hit with the way that
no doubt. No doubt. 100%.
But you know, the whole idea behind the article that I put together is you have these two timelines that at some point have to work themselves out. And I think it's safe to say that Jordan Love did not help Aaron Rodgers' timeline. And I think you can also make an argument that Aaron Rodgers, for every year that he kind of continues on, does not necessarily help Jordan Love's timeline. So can they coexist together for a period of time and have it work while Love kind of picks things up and things like that? 100%. And if Rodgers is Rodgers, some of the other stuff may not matter ultimately too much. But I do think that you ultimately end up with a situation where you don't want to be paying Aaron Rodgers a ton of money when Jordan Love is not making any money in his third or fourth year in that contract. And I think if you right. can kind of maybe move on from Rodgers sooner, let Love kind of take some of those snaps, maybe in a year where you're not expecting a ton, maybe like next year. And then all of a sudden, you know, a year and 2 years from now, he's making like $3 to $4 million per season. And you have the ability to augment your roster with a ton.
I mean, that's the thing. How much do you think that plays into it? The idea about, and I know this is all, we are all guessing on the outside. I get that. I totally get that. Including yourself, myself, whatever.
100%.
But how much do you think, now, there's no doubt that Brian, powers that be, but Brian is the one who has to make that decision, looks at that contract that Aaron has signed and with those cap hits. We all done it. And you, like I said, you wrote a great article about it. How much do you think he looked at that and said, okay, if this kid comes along, I'm ready to pull the trigger, because at some point we can only get better and or improve and or move forward as an organization. Rather than chasing a ring with Aaron, we got to turn. We got to pivot. We got to go, okay, this is our kid for the future. Get him on the field earlier rather than later and trying to build something dynastic. I mean, that's a hyperbolic nice. Word, I understand. But we got to build for the future to try and build something where we can sustain with a new guy rather than the old guy.
He's absolutely aware of it. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, that at some point that decision is going to come. I thought he was actually rather telling in his very first interview right after the draft when he was kind of asked about it. And he basically went back and said, you know, the reason why we were in the situation with Brett was because of Aaron and because of how well he looked in practice.
How good he looked. Exactly. I mean,
he's basically saying, without saying it, listen, if Jordan looks amazing,
a billion percent.
We are going to have to figure something out, you know? So I think the first onus is on Jordan to say, to look great and, you know, and get the buy-in from the rest of the franchise and Matt and Brian, everything like that. And if Jordan looks great, that's the first piece of the puzzle that has to hit. Now where is Aaron Rodgers at? Now, if all of a sudden Rodgers immediately goes back to like MVP form and you basically get a playoff berth and everything from him every single year, that makes that much more complicated. If he's kind of the same guy we've seen, which isn't bad, I'm not saying it's bad, but the same quarterback we've seen over the course of the last couple of years, now that, you know, kind of complicates things. Or all of a sudden, if he suffers a major injury or he digresses a little bit more, that complicates it even more. But he a million percent knows what, you know, where those options are, what the best opportunities are to take best advantage of Love's contract and figure out a way maybe to get the most return on investment out of Rodgers. Now it's just, do the pieces hit where A, Love looks great, B, maybe Rodgers stays the same or regresses a little bit, and C, does some team make him an offer that he simply can't refuse for Rodgers to, again, augment that roster with a ton of cap, a young quarterback, now more picks. That, to me, you want to talk about dynastic, that's the way you do it. There's still a long way to go to get there, though.
Long way, obviously. Yeah. And there's, you know, no doubt that all of this will be dissected after every throw. Are you going to – wait, clearly there won't be many fans in the stands this year, but are you – did you – I think you have tickets, right, to Lambeau?
Did you opt in
or did you opt out?
I did opt out.
Totally understand. Totally get it.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is just, you know, obviously the oddness of the entire season. You know, there's a lot of thoughts that went through my mind. You know, one, you know, potential, I am credentialed. I don't think there's going to be credentialed media. I don't know what the situation is.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be anything in the press box.
I don't think so either.
I told the Packers already, I ain't going to be there.
So I don't know what that's going to look like. I mean, I figured, you know, yeah, that was one point. And then two, I'll be totally honest too. You know, it's hard for me, even when I'm at the game, to fully turn the analyst level off. And honestly, if there's 10 to 15, 12,000 people in the stadium, I want the loudest 12,000 people in the stadium. And I'm not
sure. That won't be you.
I'm not sure I still fit in within that, you know, that group. So I hope somebody else that feels safe and comfortable and is super loud to the point of maybe even slightly obnoxious can go and have fun and make a ton of noise.
Don't worry. Corey Banky will be there. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Was that out loud? I'm sorry. Andy Herman, you are an absolute legend for joining me tonight. Thank you for taking the time. Let's do this again because it's a lot of fun.
Anytime. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Everyone else on Facebook, YouTube, thank you so much. For Andy, I'm Aaron. Go Pack, go.